794 Sorgel, June 22, 2008. Letter 4.3, final review 1. Okay, let's proceed. You have questions. And actually, before we start with this, I wanted to make one remark on the final product, which may not have been as clear as it could be in the deliverable. So, you do need a checklist for the software you finally evaluated with some ratings, so yes or no, whatever is appropriate. And you should also have just a nicely written review, and they're not necessarily the same. So I think for at least from one of the review annotations, it said, well, this was nicely written and it was useful, but there was not a formal checklist of features with evaluation. It may not even have been based on a formal checklist. No, but it was something that somebody who might consider the software would read and have a cogent argument about whether this software is useful and worthwhile considering or not. There's a difference between this sort of discursive presentation, which is useful in one way, and the more formalized and stylized checklist. Now, the formal review could be divided into sections.
Is this the review that we write, or
the review you write? No, the reviews you are writing. The reviews you write.
So what you're saying, we should be writing an evaluation checklist.
We should have you should have a checklist.
And also a review.
And also a review. And you probably will do the checklist first, because that will be the basis for the review. Some reviews flow naturally if they are structured with subsection headings according to your checklist. Others may not. I mean, it depends on your take on it, and they may put most important points first and then do... That's up to you how you... But, I mean, just write it in a discursive form so that somebody could read your review and get a sense of the program, and then could refer to the checklist with the ratings to get details. But the review should be a nicely written piece of text, not just a sort of a series of paragraphs, each addressing one piece and not connected. Does that make sense?
So you want a text summary, you want it to be good prose, and it's higher level and
yeah.
Sort of summative.
Right.
Compared to the evaluation.
Right, right. But it might for some features say how they are done, which are very important. I mean, you get a number of reviews that you know which ones you liked and which ones you don't. So emulate the ones you liked and think about the potential user. I think you have to look at a user. So in the game case, it would be teachers probably. So let's just think about the project and to whom the review would be directed. I think in the case of the game software the game production software that's maybe used in a school environment but anyway has an educational purpose, it should be directed at teachers and parents, because they would decide on selecting the software. In the case of the content management software, it would be directed at chief information officers, people who need to decide on content management software. In the case of the bibliographic tool for students, would be directed at school librarians and teachers. Actually, school librarians would be included in your audience as well. I mean, I'm not sure that would be a different review for school librarians.
That's who the review is geared for.
What? Yeah.
That's who the review
is geared for.
Geared for.
Don't you think? I mean, it's not the students that selected, it's the teachers that do. Even so, the the review will address primarily how this would play for a student user. The review is directed at the person who makes the decision. Your case, actually, would be directed at mostly school librarians and administrators. So this is software to run a school library, and that would be, this uses a private school, right? But otherwise you wouldn't have this issue at all, because it would be all run from the central office. However, it would be both private school administrators and public school administrators, because they have, that you have to think about whether the review, the software you selected and the way you looked at it, whether it would be useful for the person in the central office of a law school system that would think about library management software for the school system. That may be not your most, your key target audience, maybe private schools that have their own independent system. That may be a different market, a different kind of use. That may be your audience. So let's look, you're doing
online community social media.
Software to support online communities, the creation and operation of an online community, if you will. This is interesting, because who is setting up online communities? You may not, so this may just be by function. It will be addressed to anybody who is thinking of either starting an online community on some topic, or who is a member of an online community that operates on some platform they don't necessarily like.
Webmasters. Because it's the webmaster,
yes,
school or library who would get that job.
If it was an online, you said we are going to sort of have some discussion group of. I don't know if the schools do this yet, but they have all these. There's a chess club and this club and that club and the other club. So a school could build a number of virtual groups.
Most of them don't.
But they could, and so, but it would be again function. Mm-hmm. It would be anybody. It could be just, you might want to set up something, or somebody who has a chronic disease that needs a support group and doesn't have one may want to set up one. It could be any citizen who wants to use it. And you would expect a certain amount of technical savvy, because otherwise they couldn't do it, but you wouldn't necessarily want only, if you want a software that somebody can do with a given level. So that's how you would determine your audience. And that's what's your product?
It's actually SharePoint, but I guess the overarching theme is a software that helps firms create intranets and collaborative content,
yeah,
management.
So that would be CIOs, again, chief information officers. Mm-hmm. Same audience did you touch base some, and I'm just thinking there might be useful to exchange sources anyway. It's a little, the focus is a little different, but they're just doing the overlap. When we meet on the 12th, there are six presentations, or probably, I mean, if any of you really have trouble with the timing in the course and you're not going to be ready for a presentation on the 12th, then just talk to me and that's fine. But we're planning for six. And you should plan to talk about 35 minutes, or really 15 minutes for discussion. That makes 50 minutes for each type of software. we'll have a 10-minute break. So that will let us do 3 in the morning from 9 to 12. We'll take an hour break and do 3 in the afternoon from 1 to 4. That will be the schedule for 12. Okay. Don't forget to send me slides later, no later than the Thursday before, so I can have a look over and give you some advice. These are on Belgian content, they're informed. Because while you're doing these live presentations, you might as well, as a sort of a side benefit, improve your skills on doing good slides. It's sort of a good skill to have these days.
You say you want a presentation with an outline.
Right, so for your presentation, actually, it would be quite useful to have your checklist ready in print. If you send it to me, I can print it and make the copies. I think it would be useful for everybody to have your checklist. Checklists or not, I mean, you can't do some highlights on slides, but you can't do a whole checklist on slides. The paper is just a much better format for that purpose. And so we'll do both.
So that's what the outline.
There may be.
If we have other parts of the presentation other than our slides, we have an outline that says we'll do the slide presentation and then we'll do.
Actually, it would be helpful if you have in print. I mean, you just send it to me so I can print it or print with you an outline of the presentation and the checklist. Because then people can have in front of them your outline. They always know where you are in addition to your talk. If you cannot do a slide presentation, you can't do that. Well, you could. I mean, you don't know how many people there are, and sometimes people do a handout, and sometimes, but usually they don't.
There's only 8 of them.
Right. So here we can do it. Mm-hmm. What people usually do, they'll have an outline at the front of the slide, and then they will say, go to the next section. So repeat the outline with the section that's now coming up in red or something. So you always have the context. But it's even better if you have an outline on paper in front of you in addition to having them in the slides, because then you can always know where the speaker is, and you always have the overall picture. That's the user interface principle. To always have the total context people. So you have the outline in print for total context, and you have the checklist because it's too much detail to put in slides. And the slide presentation will be more a higher level presentation of what the kind of software does and what the particular kind of human. It could have screenshots, it could have. You have to watch out with screenshots, so make sure to make them big enough that they can be read. So, if you just take a screenshot and make it a slide, it's usually not readable. So what you have to do a screenshot in high enough resolution, and then crop out the part that's important to show. Usually it's not important to show the whole screen. You just need to show one piece. And then crop it out and blow it up so it can be read. It's the same principle we discussed for software evaluation applied to slides, document design. It has to be readable on the screen. Yeah?
Okay, for the evaluation paper, is that just
the comparative analysis of the five review with our review and our revised checklist, or what
is going to be
done? Okay, what deliverable are you referring to?
4.4.
Are there
two papers there?
So that's what we just talked about, the evaluation paper, that's the review.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, let me.
If you could explain 4-4 kind of thoroughly, that would be great.
Yes. Okay. So what you will finally hand in will be, I think that's explained somewhere, will be all the deliverables over the course of the your total package, and you can just reuse them. You can modify them, or you can just hand them in again as you handed them in before. If you do that, and if I've made notes on it, and you didn't change it, give me the copy of my notes. Okay, but if you change it, then it's a different. So if you go back and you do different sources and you want to adjust your source report, then just tell me it's a new one. But if just give me the old one, which is probably in that case better call the vaccine anyway, give it to me as my notes.
For something like the checklist, which we had, you know, a few
iterations. You give me the last one.
The last one. Okay.
Yeah.
For this,
yeah.
This is the final evaluation paper.
No, Yeah, this may be a misnomer now that we discuss this, so let me just... So, there is a final product from your project.
Total package.
And this just really has a final evaluation package, it really means the name here. So, and this consists of all the things you have handed in, or supposed to hand in by today, mm-hmm. yesterday and today, so it's just all in one...
Book. So all the deliverables from 3-3.
Yes, even two. Let's just send the deliverables in two. Include deliverable one. I mean, just include them all, because there is a logical sequence.
Okay.
So the package consists of all the deliverables, either in their original state or amended. I mean. Somebody may want to go back and amend their notes on what the tasks are people have to accomplish and what they have to think about when they do them, because you learn more about it by now. It's not required. It's just, I mean, if you do that, you can do that. And so it goes up to the day then to the five review annotations using the form, 4.1. And for 4.4, you do all of the above, plus what's added is the final checklist applied to the software, and the nicely written review. And then, if this was going to be published, you could look at the checklist applied to the software as an appendix to the review. But if you actually do it in time, it obviously makes sense to first do the check. Well, maybe you do it in parallel, but the review will certainly draw on the checklist.
Should
we include the presentation outline and the slides in this, or is that just all delivered separately? Actually, you could, but this probably makes a completer pass. You could just print out your slides, stick to a page, and it doesn't take up a lot of space, and it will make the package complete.
Yeah, you can print slides out. Is that what you just said?
Right. And so that's a complete record of your project as you develop it, as the complete package. And so what 4.4 doesn't say is give the complete package. And what I refer to as a written evaluation paper is still as a review. But, I mean, it's, the fact that it's called it a paper points to it's not a 1.5-page review.
Okay.
It's an extension for you of the software. I didn't give any number of pages, but it could be 5 pages, it could be 10, it could be it's a reasonably sized paper.
So the discursive form should be a.
Yes, it should be an extensive review.
Extensive review, and then the evaluation checklist just has the okay.
Yeah, the evaluation checklist just has the sort of the raw data, if you will. For every feature, it has a piece, but. You want somebody to read 5 pages and really have a sense of the problem. That's where that it, in a lot of what you do in your slides, it's the slides of in a way a different form of the same message. Right? So the slides will go a long way to help you write the paper. Sometimes if there's just a list of a bullet list to be made, you can just take a slide, you can just take a bullet list from the slide and put them in your paper like this. Or you can say figure 1, points to consider in. You put your slide in. So, but it's like a paper in a software review journal. And they do 5 to 10 page reviews, which are sort of in size and style like any other scholarly paper. That's what the nature of the review is at the end. In the from the presentation and the discussion, you get some feedback on improving the paper. And during the whole process, I mean, you know how to write papers, but you want to keep a log, if it were, or a collection of notes on what you want to put in the paper. Whenever you do a paper, you start out by collecting notes of things you want to put in, and as you do the 5 published reviews, as you conduct your own evaluation, thoughts will occur to you what to put in the paper.
Maybe. There can be stuff in this paper that is from, like, comparative reviews. You can talk about other pieces of stuff.
Absolutely, yes.
It's not a rehash of your checklist. It contains your checklist, but filled out all of that information, but it also has stuff from your industry search and everything.
Yes. Whatever would be interesting to know for somebody considering that software. And that's not just a checklist. There are other considerations. And some of it you may learn from other reviews. You learn it from your evaluation. To give one example I think it was in the game software, which I said, based on the just plain checklist, yes or no, one program would have won. But in games, the quality of the graphics in the end is very important. And so the other software that almost all the people, not quite all, but had much better graphics, won out. That it may be more useful. So you sort of emphasize features that are good, and of course you always say things that are bad, but you relate it to the audience and the past.
Would you include anything about why maybe this particular software is useful or could be used, but also like an overview of why the type of software, but
absolutely
not specific software.
Yes. You gotta say why, because in order for people to understand your rationale why this is a good piece of software or why this is not a good piece of software, they need to know what it's for. Yes, so writing about the type of software and what it's used for and why is absolutely in the ballpark for that. I would agree.
For 4.1, do we have to do an annotation for the 5?
Yes.
Okay.
It says a comparative analysis, and
yeah,
I wonder, is that different from doing a you know, applying a form to each review?
Do
you want us to compare the reviews to each other? Or
yes.
Or are the reviews themselves are already, I'm not sure what you mean.
So I want to do a form for each of the reviews, and then based on that, you say, Kahneman, if you were to recommend one of these 5 reviews, do a comparative analysis and say why this is the best. But you don't need to say why this is the best. Just, and the comparative analysis doesn't need to be long. It just needs to say this one was good on that, and that was good on that, and so it's going to give you more of a sense of what's a good review, and it will help you write your own if you analyze them.
When we apply the form, can we do the, you know, which number we're on, write something about it, and then you want us to give it a numeric score?
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't have to use the PDF form. We can just word process it any way we want,
yes,
as long as we've got numbers,
yes,
on the side.
Yes. 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 Didn't they send you a word version?
I don't know what I got.
I did send you a real reason. Yeah. Before the course started even, yeah. Where I was thinking of it.
Okay, so but you want us to use that word version, but we can put in more.
You don't need to use that word version.
Okay.
You can put in some comments. On some areas it may not be worthwhile putting in comments, you just give an evaluation. I mean, you just give a score.
Okay.
Give a summary. You can use that document if it helps you, that template. If it doesn't help you, you can do something else.
Okay, but you want all the information that we had on the annotated reviews,
yeah,
plus the formal score.
Right.
It should be in this package chronologically from
yeah,
when
yeah,
we first started.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
The 5 reviews, like each of us who did reviews that we did before, I mean, I used one of my best ones for Moodle tools in the prior. I need to be able to refer to that.
Just reuse it.
So
yeah.
You're going to have to find 4 more.
Yeah, if you already have one good review for the program you're choosing, it
just reuse it.
If
coming up with 5 means that one of them is not much of a review, then so be it. You just say so.
If you can just up with 4, I mean, it's 5 is an indication of what you should do. If you can't find 5, you do 4.
There's plenty of reviews that
are
just not very good.
Oh, like little.
Yeah,
there's
lots of them. They have the same thing.
Yeah.
There's lots of little blurbs, I guess you can.
I mean, you may have to be creative and say, okay, I will find this list where people writing questions and answer things, and you just say, okay, since there are no reviews, and somebody would have to look at this list in lieu of a review, I will sort of look at this list and evaluate it as if it were a review. And it's perfectly reasonable to compare and say, here I have one long review and here I have this list, what do I get out of each? So take it in spirit and not too literally.
On 4.3, you say the stuff that illustrates the program's functioning and the reasons for the scores on the checklist. Are we supposed to be computing a score on our checklist, or is that optional?
No, the scores means on individual items. Individual items of your checklist should have scales.
They should.
Yeah. And you can use 1, 2, 3, you can use 0 to 4, you can use... But, I mean, yes, for some things you can say yes and no. But even say in the gaming piece, that's the question whether it's 2D or 3D games. So can it do 3D games? You say yes or no. But maybe one does 3D games so-so and the other does it really well.
Do you need us to do a composite score at the end?
Not necessarily, no.
Good. Because I've got a bunch of things in my checklist that are there because they're a part of the bibliographic management tools, but they're not present in my piece of software because they're not really supposed to be, because it's doing a subset.
Right.
And so it's like you'd be tempted to leave them out if it was going to give it a horrible score, but it's better to leave them in and just say it doesn't do these things, and that's okay.
No, the individual scores can be given
I think that
they can be given somewhat independently of the purpose. Not the individual scores, or the individual features.
Right,
but the composite scores depend on the purpose.
Correct.
So different people may weight the individual features quite differently.
Yes.
So in your application, many of the features you have given a score to will not make a hoot of difference to your purpose. So you, for your purpose, the weight for the composite score for those features would be zero. But if somebody else wanted to evaluate the program for a different purpose, their weighting scheme for the features may be quite different. They may value that feature. And if it is not present, that may give a poor composite score for this same program, different purpose. I think I briefly talked about that under sort of the heading of testing versus evaluation. In testing, you see is the feature there in how well does the program do this feature. And that you can determine, again, largely independent from what purpose the program is put to.
Right, I got you.
Yeah.
I just didn't know
yeah.
we needed
to score right. something. Yeah. For the features that are important for you, the scores will be important. Because it may give guidance to how to do a bibliographic citation, but the guidance may be poor. So it gets a 1. If it doesn't give any guidance at all, it gets a 0. If it gets a 1, another one might get a 4. That will make a difference. If you were to do a composite score for your purpose, that would make a difference. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes do composite scores and compute them, and sometimes they just sort of look at the checklist and do the composite score in their head. But in the end, you decide program 1 or 2. Right. And so, based on what? In the end, you do have a composite score in your head, you just don't make it explicit. And it may be okay for some purpose, other purpose may be better to make it explicit. Alright, so I guess we reviewed some concepts along with just looking at the product. Are you clear about what you need to do now for the final product?
Is there another essay, this 3 to 5
yes.
pages summarizing your
yes.
thoughts on software evaluation?
Yes, that's the course requirement, it's not part of the project package.
And what's supposed to be in that?
Any
clues?
I think I talked about it at some point, but I will. The short of it is, if in 5 years you want to look back and say, what did I learn in the software evaluation course? The 3 to 5 page essay should give you an answer. It's sort of the wisdom you distilled out of this course. So it's not a rehash of the project. It's more software evaluation. Principles you learned, other things you learned, how do you expect to apply this on the job, connecting ideas from the course to other things outside the course. So it's a reflection. It's one of the things where I don't want to say too much in order not to hem in your own creativity or thought, you want to do that. And there can be excellent essays that are quite different, because they are a personal take on the course material to a high level. Do you have an idea what to do? No?
Sure.
Okay. So you probably could take this in five different directions. You have to take one and do it. Or you reflect all five and it's done.
Did you expect it to be in the first person? Is it a narrative?
It could be. It doesn't need to be.
Generally that's not allowed. It just sounds like it might be a case where it's appropriate.
It? Oh, it's...
Whatever.
Yeah, no, it's completely allowed.
First person to be.
Yeah, first person is fine. But even in writing, where it's officially not allowed, it may still be the most useful thing to do. The worst thing about style rules is to apply them dogmatically. You always have to apply them with. There is a rationale. You don't want to put you, the author, in the foreground, but the material you talk about.
So, presenting research, you usually don't do anything like that in the first person.
You usually don't, but that's one of the rules that may sometimes be usefully focused. Some things that have yet done just read most naturally in the first person.
One of the reviews that I read was about what an idiot the guy was.
Okay.
Just, is there any time by which this is due on Monday, the 21st?
No.
Okay.
And again, if the deadline is the problem, just let me know. I mean, particularly if you take a school in the second summer session, you don't want to drag this on forever. And so it's more sort of a your own time management deadline than anything else. It's better to do a good job. Okay. So let's go to page 133. Let's go to the bottom first. You have questions you want to ask before we... This is your sort of the
evaluation plan. I don't know about everybody else, but I gave you a very brief one and didn't get any comments back on it. Are there elements of the evaluation that are required, or should we just send you another evaluation plan and have you tell us whether that's sufficient, or...
After yesterday's lecture, you should have some idea what's in the evaluation plan.
Sure. Lots of ideas. We've only got 3 weeks of papers in an evaluation, so the question is what's necessary to do a good job.
Okay.
Clearly, you can't spend 6 months on this.
Right. Just the people that I said at some point earlier, you want to do an evaluation plan as if you had 6 months and then indicate what you're actually doing for the project. Okay, because I mean, you need to be able to come up with a good evaluation plan for, if you look at this in real life, you need to come up with a good evaluation plan for real life. So give an evaluation plan for real life and then indicate what you're actually going to do. So in real life, you might have a usability test with 15 students. In the project, you may have sort of a pilot usability session with one student or one young person you know have access to. So where appropriate, it would be good to have that, at least that one person down. So in the archive software, what we use for the gaming software, if you have access to a person, you have to do something, you can observe, that would be good. In library management, that's unlikely going to happen unless you had a demo of the program you prefer and there's a real database behind it and you could search. See, in their case, it's not feasible to do a usability study.
Yeah, you do what's feasible and you write up what would be perfect.
Yes. The online community groups, I don't think you could have a person actually try it out easily, because it's, even if you find the software, you find, maybe you could, I don't think, there may be certain configuration that could be done easily, and so you could have somebody try it out. So just think about what you can do in the project.
But maybe base it more on tutorials and things, if there are tutorials on the website. I don't know.
Then you mean if you cannot do a usability session, you have to do usability walkthroughs of your own, that you are the expert.
Then you're being the expert.
Then you are the expert. And usability assessment, and if you have the program itself, you use it. If you have only a demo on the web, you use whatever material you can get your hands on. If there is a manual, and sometimes there are manuals on the web, that gives you a good idea how the program works. If you can't understand the manual, then it's probably hope. Questions on concepts in the course. So, well, what do you keep in the back of your mind as we think, and if you don't have them on top of your head now, let's look at the final review question number one. Page 133. Final review, question one. So rather than going through topic by topic, which we may do if there's time at the end, we are looking at problems. Solve, and they are similar types of questions that you will find on the panel.
You want to think about the equipment that you would need to set up the software testing lab?
So one element would be the equipment. Let's start a little bit more at the beginning.
Fill up the criteria for evaluating.
So a part of the plan would be to develop an evaluation checklist for educational software. Yes. So how would you go about that?
Criteria, the usability criteria,
Right. So I mean, you could just start with a general list of software evaluation criteria, and then you need to, I mean, for a purpose like this, you should have a comprehensive list. So you could find the one from these lecture notes and amend it. You could find a similar list someplace else.
And then maybe you put together something like a, I mean, you'd have to have procedures that would say for each thing you're looking at, first you have to talk to the teachers and students and figure out what you're trying to do, and then what kind of software you would look at to do it, and then look at the software available and then pick one, and then you're going to apply this evaluation. So it's the whole process, not just evaluating what they hand you, right?
Oh, yeah. No, so that's sort of an outline of things that have to be in the total plan.
That's in the plan. The evaluation checklist is part of that.
But using the evaluation checklist is part of the plan.
And figuring out what parts of it are the most important for your audience, your students. Mm.
You will probably have sort of a generic evaluation checklist, or sort of an inventory of all the features and characteristics you would consider, from which then for each type of software you evaluate, you would pick a subset and possibly amend it. But so what Getcha said in a minute, let's first go back to how do we come up with the sort of the basic evaluation checklist, which we can then apply and modify to different types of software. So far we just have the generic list, but there's a big hole in there. In B it just says functions of that particular kind of software.
So you have to fill that in for whatever kind of software you're after.
Well, you have to fill that in for educational software in general.
Go look and see if you can find any others that are out there that, you know, might use some ideas, do some research, look at some reviews.
There are many lists of specific educational software evaluation criteria. So you would get those and get pieces from there. But actually, looking at this check, we're still starting somewhere in the middle. And I mean, you pointed out some things we need to do beforehand.
Write procedures. You need to write a procedures guide to tell people what to do.
I don't think that would be the very first thing to do, but that certainly, I mean, part of the plan will be a procedure for evaluating specific types of software.
Yeah, so you've got to know where to start whenever you want.
That would be part of the plan development. What should be done very first?
Figure out what the district needs are and what the specific needs are of the school district about the criteria and the curriculum.
Right. So you need to look at the curriculum of that school district. You need to look at the population of students.
I mean, software base that you're working with, the environment.
You would have to look at what software is already available, what's their hardware pieces. So you'd have to get a sense of what needs and constraints are at present. And that would be, some of that investigation could be done as depending what they mean devise a plan. If they give you 3 months to devise a plan, then studying those requirements would be part of developing the plan.
But you'd be doing a few of these things concurrently.
If they give you 2 days to devise the plan, then there would be an item that you need to review the curriculum and the different schools and the types of students and the teachers and all of these background pieces.
The budget.
It would be useful to know how much money is available for software testing. But on the other hand, that may be putting the cart before the horse, because you really need to know what needs to be done in order to. But that's sort of a give and take. I mean, they may say we have a $10,000 budget and you just laugh.
Well, it helps you know how to prioritize your criteria. Like, cost may be very important, may not be very important.
Right. So I think one of the center's requirements and curriculum and type of students, then you could look at two things. The checklist is one, but what would even you know, do the checklist. So you know the landscape of the school system and what they want to teach and to whom. And I think somebody might have mentioned this before, but that's one part. That's like, what else do you need to know in order to sensibly talk about what software might be introduced in the school system?
Software
is
out there?
Yes. So as part, maybe I would probably, I mean, it's a plan, if there's enough time to do this plan, there should be a review, if you will, of the different kinds of educational software and how they might be applied in that school district. You may have a school district where for half the students, English is the second language. There's lots of software that can help us as students. Well, you have a school district where there aren't any. Where there are no immigrants, no foreign-born Americans. There's just a Native American. It's not the right term either. And people who are born here in the mainstream of this culture. And then you don't need to look at that aspect of software. But so you will know what software will be useful. Then that will help you in coming up with this generic base of software evaluation criteria and characteristics. I mean, I also mean any feature or function becomes an evaluation criteria by virtue of the fact that you evaluate the software by how well it does that function. Right. Okay. So now we may be at a point where we can look now, what facility do we need to evaluate specific pieces of software? I mean, somebody talked about before about equipment.
You and Mark can speak. What is available in schools and possibly stuff that's better than what's available so you can see. Upgrading will help things.
Exactly. So, in one sense, I mean, you need to have, if the school is all Macs, you will have some Macs, but you should have some PCs so you can test PC-based software. Because you may find that for certain classes, maybe the chemistry classroom needs PCs because the best chemistry software is PC-based. So you have equipment both representative and advanced. You may want some workstations with two screens. Because for some tasks, two screens can make a lot of difference. for note-taking, for example, makes a lot of difference to have two screens so you can read on one and copy and paste your notes on the other, particularly if you use a note-taking tool. So as she said, you want to have equipment that can really support software or combinations of software use better than just a plain. If the classrooms are still equipped with plain computers with a 640 times, what's that? Whatever the resolution is. 640 times 460 or something like that, 480. Which is really below par these days, and much software may not run properly, and well, at least the images will not show up and in a good way, therefore may not be enticing. So there's a lot of if the majority of the equipment is now below par, then you have to think, is there a chance, if we demonstrate the benefit, that this equipment could be replaced? If you say no, there's no chance, then you need to test on the old equipment and you see what how would you arrange that equipment? How would you set up the testing lab?
Network with internet
connectivity. Maybe you need a room with a 1-hand mirror, video, so that you can record stuff. Mm-hmm.
You want the educational
software that students are using, you probably want it to feel kind of like the education, the situation they'll be in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So that, because putting one kid in class in a room that he knows he's being watched and telling him to perform something is going to be very different than having 30 of them in the classroom attempting to do it at the same time.
So some of the usability tests may be done in a simulated classroom. Mm-hmm. They need to be able to do that. On the other hand, some you may just do individually, and so you may want to have, but definitely earphones, so students can use voice software that uses voice that is disturbing others. You may want to have some flexible arrangement where you can put some partitions so you can do individual testing.
Move around so you can do group testing too.
Yeah.
Stuff with it. You know, they would use
this
group.
Right. Yeah, it could be. So you need a now is that the only way? It's the only way you're going to evaluate and do tests in the lab.
I can see having laptops and going to actual schools to evaluate.
Do observation.
Can do it in actual classrooms and things.
You could just go to the classroom and have computers.
Mm-hmm. That too.
So you just do field observation. Sometimes it's useful to log the interactions. Of course, all the computers in the lab should have a logging software in them.
Also, there's really neat things that happen in lab groups. They're actually kind of annoying, but where you can just say, "Show me everything that the guy on computer 57 is doing," and then your screen just shows you his screen. We have that. It's called Vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets us sit in the front of the computer lab, and when kids at 28 and 27 start giggling, you can check and see what they're doing.
You could use something like that definitely in the lab. It's not the same as logging, but it's a way of observing what the students do without having them. Of course, there are privacy problems with that. So if they have that in the library, that would be some problematic.
We do, but it's part of the acceptable use policy. It's a statement that...
No, in the school library,
yeah.
It's fine.
The public library.
In the public library, it's not.
Right.
No. But that technology would want in the testing lab. Mm-hmm. It may technology that's existing in classrooms anyway, mm-hmm. in which you can take advantage of it for observation. What's would be harder to do in actual real classrooms where you observe is logging all the keystrokes. So as part of your plan, some classrooms may be equipped that way.
I have a question, just a practical question. Is it customary that in this situation they would have access to the software, like a demo or something, where you could take the software into class and let the students use it without purchasing it? I would assume that they're
30 days or 60 days, especially if you're representing a possible big purchase. That's right. A lot of times.
Oh, I hope so. It may cost.
I don't know if everybody will, but I know someone will. I guess if you try. You try to get a hold of it.
Yeah, or
if you're going to have to buy, if you're going to have to buy site licenses for the district, you're probably willing to kick in whatever it costs to buy one copy, and then you can test that one copy before you spend whatever it costs.
But that one, when you say one copy, one license? No.
Well, you can buy a license for an individual for, you know, one machine or three machines, and then you can test it at your leisure before you buy it for the school district. If they won't give it to you for free.
It'd still be kind of interesting if you only have one license. One user could use it, or am I misunderstanding?
I'm just saying, if you can get them to give you a test copy for free, then great. If they won't give you a test copy for free and you're contemplating buying something for the whole school system, well, better to just buy an individual copy or however many you need for testing, and then that's just money lost if you decide you don't want it.
Right. Much better than to get the side license and then find out it's not good. But that gets us sort of to the next phase of the plan. The first phase of the plan is we need to have the intellectual foundation, which is the requirement study and the base sort of generic checklist from which we can derive checklists for specific pieces of software. It's putting in place the technical facility as well as plans for observation and possibly equipping some computers or labs in the field with more data capturing capabilities than I have. Developing procedures whereby we test software. Now, we sort of get into these procedures and say, this is part of, we have to get to this point. Then the plan is specified, okay, now comes our first software product test. How do we find out about it in the first place?
Can we research a particular kind of software to pick the candidate?
If a teacher needs something to teach the kids how to do math, I don't know. So if she has a need for it, I mean, do they come to some place like this person working at a software testing lab and ask her, you know, this is what I need to do, can you find something that would do that? Or?
So we need to have a mechanism whereby teachers can communicate needs. And they can either just say, I need to do X, I need software for it. Or they will say, I need Y software. In which case the people in this testing unit should ask them, why do you need Y software? Because you don't just want to take the teacher's word for it. You want to find out what is it needed for. So we know we need a software for this purpose. Then what do we do? Well, at that point, it gets sort of obvious. You do exactly what you did. You look around. What kind of software are available?
Selection
and
evaluation.
In particular, with education software, I mean, actually, some of you guys will go to some other company, company software. What do we do with education software? In If you look at growth processing for a company, you may ask them other companies that they use and get their experience.
Ask other schools or other districts.
Other school districts. I mean, get some. Yeah, some. No, they may not have done the best job of selecting this. So don't necessarily take their word for it. But at least get some sense of their experience. And so they may have something using, by the way, they are, so we select some for preliminary testing. Then comes the question of how do we get a hold of it? Could be a demo, it could be a processing a 1C copy, it could be by going to another district. And maybe they let you test it. So if you select one for in-depth testing, or if you select two for in-depth testing, now we can look at what do we do in this, how do we organize the tests. If this is software new to the district,
do you want to have some of the teachers that teach that subject maybe look at it? I would think, although I don't know whether you want to do that early on or.
Actually, I think you want to do this very early on, and so this is a good idea. So we even in the phase where we still winnow out from the 20, the three we can look at in detail, the two we look at in detail.
Well,
we have
to
do that
also in the evaluation checklist. Don't talk to the teachers to begin with and say what features do you need. So they, before they look at it, they're telling you what it has to have.
Right. So the procedure may designate some software selection committees, which could be the same as a textbook committee, conceivably. Don't want to have collaboration of committees, and so those committees would help from the beginning.
You probably want to wait if the teacher requested a specific type of software to have that teacher involved, because he or she is not going to be very excited if they request something and then 3 months later the people who are experts show up and hand them another piece of software and say, you're using this. Congratulations.
Okay. It's a very good point. Our procedure needs to be it needs to make sure that the technically best software is selected, but it also needs to make sure that people who are supposed to use it will buy into it. And they will not buy into it if they were not involved in the decision. So when it comes to just looking at two, you may put together sort of an information package on them and send it to all the teachers who are teaching that subject who might use the software, not just the ones that are on the selection committee, to get feedback at that level. That's still all at the level of sort of expert assessment. So now what when it gets to actual testing? What do we do?
We can go through either the expert walkthrough, the usability, which might be a good place to start, and then you probably want, if it's something that students are going to directly interact with, students in there to test, or if it's piece of software teachers are going to use for presentation, you want teachers in.
So we need to get people in our testing lab subjects, find students somehow who will use it, we observe them and all the things. You don't know what part of your think aloud. Maybe you have, if it's for pairs of students, you have two students working it. which gives you sort of a natural single out. A single out of an individual is artificial, but if there are two people working on it, it's natural. And that will give us, well, first of all, that might tell us, never mind. It may also tell us, well, that seems good if we can tweak this and this and this. Or it may tell us, well, we really have to instruct students in this and this and this way before we further can probably use the software. So we give us all those. Let's assume we have a pretty good feel about things. This might work. What's the next step in the process? So we have done some individual students. We've done down for usability studies. We revised the instructions. We've gotten some new ones in to see whether these revised instructions now it works. And so, what's next?
Use
your
classroom, real situation.
You now want to do a dry run, make sure it works in an actual classroom. So you find a teacher who is willing to test, and you test it. Now, what do you want to know from this classroom use?
The whole class could be using it at the same time.
So you need to have one or two observers there who can spot when students get stuck, who can spot when students do something not quite the optimal way. Just observe. So that would be usability. Paul, what else do you want to know? Maybe even more important.
Use the tool to do whatever the curriculum assignment is. Is it actually working to...
Do the students actually learn something? So, at that point, this may become sort of a quasi-experimental study. And what you want to find out is whether students using the software actually learn more or learn the same thing in less time than students who do not. So then you need to collect data about the individual students and their knowledge, which they do presumably in testing in the classroom anyway.
So if you want to know if they're going to do it in less time, say, than, you know, being taught in a classroom that isn't using this software, I guess you'd have to also have, you know, you'd have to like have something to compare it to know if they do it in less time. So you'd have to have another classroom that was also experiments. You were not experimenting on, but gather data from the like a control group.
Okay. Right.
Wouldn't you coordinate that with like, I don't know, those people that are administrators but not teachers, but they look at the way that people teach. I mean, wouldn't you coordinate that? Software testing. Or, I don't know.
I've never worked in a school.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's your staff
development.
Yes,
staff development. Well,
Well, I mean, there's also the principal has to write an evaluation of his teacher, right? Don't they?
I don't know. I assume so.
Maybe not.
I'm not a teacher, so I don't know.
But in any event, I think it's a good idea to, since this is all wrapped up in the learning assessment, to integrate that process of testing whether the software actually contributes with the general learning assessment process and procedure in the school.
It's going to be really hard to do that kind of assessing the effectiveness of the software. It seems to me almost a post-decision sort of thing, because you're only going to be able to borrow those kids to try the software out a little bit. You're not going to be able to borrow them for a whole science unit to see how well they do.
You could have a teacher who just uses this software
for
a semester.
Site,
yeah. Yeah. They use it for a whole semester, but it's still not acquired for the school system.
So that's a very extensive...
Very extensive test.
And that's not usability testing anymore. That's testing of effectiveness.
Yes. That's utility testing. Is how, and so you might have... But the comparison may be with other classrooms that don't use the program. or it may be for the same teacher in the previous semester. And you then get into these problems of the very thorny problems of testing effectiveness of teaching methods. Mm-hmm. It's very hard because you have many influences of the teacher, the students. Many could be that on average the students in this semester are the first models than the ones before. So you would need to look at the test results of individual students.
And you're probably departing your charter from the point of view of a normal school system. They may not want you to do this much with your testing lab. They may not want to pay for it. This is more of a university educational software.
So no, as I said, schools do a lot of testing of what students know and what they learn. And so if you just piggyback on that one and you do this while we're talking without the software, you might get some data that are useful.
Sure.
And then you have to write it all up and in the end. Of course, you will look at maybe it's your neighboring district has done that process for that software already. So when you look for literature on a piece of software, it may not be literature, I mean, if you look for information, you want to, for this question, see whether any studies have been done on utility. If this was done for a company in work processing, you would want to look for studies, and there may be, on efficiency of producing documents, and producing certain kinds of documents with the given piece of software. I mean, to make this thing worse, I mean, whether the software is effective or not may also depend on the teacher.
Some teachers teach software very well, and some teach much better using traditional manipulatives.
Right. So you would have to keep all of those things in mind as well. Okay, then let's stop this one, and we ran somewhat over time, so we should meet again at 2:10 and talk about the other. There are two questions to talk about, and you may want to reflect on question four and maybe do some brainstorming on question four and important ideas along the course. Should I do this on the computer? Should we do question four? Would it be helpful?
Yeah.
To put it on the screen? Okay, I'll bring it back. I thought I was done with it today. End of this session. Oh, okay. Okay, let's do this question, then stop.
It was just the one. I just, having finished question one and seeing how in-depth we got, how many questions of this kind would you expect to have on the final?
This, I think, would be an hour's question.
So there'd be like three of them?
Yeah. So the questions, there may be some more smaller questions, but the bulk of the exam is for you to think through some bigger problem.
It's not going to be 60 multiple choice questions. It's going to be three essays.
No, multiple choice questions on insult to intelligence. at least at the graduate level.
Just curious about the format of the essay.
And sort of short memory recall questions are close behind. So they're going to be questions that require you to think and apply concepts to solving a problem. You didn't need to open the book to brainstorm on this one. So it's a closed book, and looking at the book probably would just be a distraction. I didn't really think that through, but you could bring, if you wanted to, a two pages of sort of a cheat sheet. So if you want to bring two pages of notes.
Okay, so you don't have to memorize the checklist.
So you could put your usability criteria on there and whatever. And as I say always, if I give this option, it would be very useful to you to make those two pages. Whether it would be useful to have them here by the exam, I don't know. But it would be very, it would be very useful to make them. It's a good way to do sort of review. Okay. Now we're at the end of the session. Huh?